Welcome to another episode of the Football Road Podcast. It's been a few weeks since I've joined you, but I'm happy to be back. And we're going to be going into a very, very exciting episode with Antonio, who's been on the podcast earlier, childhood Madrid fan who is born and bred Madrid, lives Madrid, eats Madrid, and knows everything Madrid. We're also joined by Rohin, who has been a long-term Barca fan, 19 years of supporting a club that has really shaped modern football in many ways. And we're really looking forward to a conversation that's going to shed a lot of light on these two juggernauts of football, two clubs that have really shaped modern football, that have really shared so many trophies, so many moments within themselves, and have given us so much to remember about, you know, in our beautiful game. So let's get going. There are a few interesting topics to cover, especially surrounding Madrid's summer signings as well as Barca's financial conundrums. But we're going to get going, especially with the state of La Liga from the very beginning. So over the last few months, we've seen a very different shape of football, a footballing world that has been dominated by Saudi Arabian money, a footballing world that has been accused of spot washing. And to an extent, we are living in times where the whole idea of the beautiful game seems to be getting lost. In the meantime, there are these wonderful clubs that continue to flag, or they continue to represent what the game really holds and the league that really represents total football. So Antonio, I want to start with you, especially since you're an ardent La Liga watcher. What do you think is the state of the league at the moment? Where do you think it stands in this wave of modern football?
That's a good question. And it's hard to answer because we haven't seen an influx of money in this degree, you know, I would say in history. But it's tough. I would say La Liga teams had their worst season in Europe in the past, I would say 10 years. But to put that into perspective, this season in terms of UEFA coefficient that I like to use as a metric for, comparing performances across leagues, 2022-2023 was still better than three out of the last five Bundesliga seasons and four out of the last five Serie A seasons. So this is to say that even though it was a bad season in terms of La Liga, it was still decent compared to the rest of the other top four leagues. England aside, we're in a period where England teams are dominating in Europe. So I would say that even though we had a really bad season from the perspective of performances, it wasn't the worst. We still had Sevilla winning the Europa League, of course. Madrid made semifinals, but we did miss Barca and Atletico, and to an extent Villarreal left early in the Conference League. So there's room to grow. As for the money influx, it is worrying, but at the same time, this is just every day for La Liga clubs. They're used to having to sell their players. If anything, maybe now they're getting more money for what they're worth. So allow them to have extra income, because now every club is loaded and the money is trickling down from Villa being able to sell their players for 100 million now, or Brighton selling their players for 100 million. Now they're buying La Liga players for 20, 30 million, when before the La Liga clubs didn't have the leverage to ask for as much. So it's a question of can La Liga clubs still remain good scouting, remain clubs that are good at scouting and good at developing players. A lot of the new signings coming into Villarreal, into Bilbao, Sociedad, they're teams that really rely on their academy teams to generate talent and then sell Pau Torres, sell the Laportes, the Samuel Chukwueses. They sell those type of players into better teams in England and abroad to fund the project. So it's tough to say. But I'm faithful in La Liga teams being still good at what they do, and more money means, more money for them to run their operations. So I don't see an issue in that regard.
No, that's a good point, Anto. I think we have a lot to chew on, especially in that regard. And I'll quickly sort of, you know, move to Rohin very briefly. You know, in terms of, you know, specifically Barcelona, right? You know, Barcelona has been a club that has, you know, repeatedly churned out wonderful talents from La Masia. And it's a conversation we've had, you know, off air as well. Do you think that a club like Barcelona, which was sort of the natural transition for a star player moving forward, is going to have to rely more and more on La Masia as football moves forward? Or do you think some parity can be achieved?
Yeah, so La Masia has always been something Barca has heavily, heavily relied on. This we're talking about even in one of the most successful phases of the club, which was that Pep Guardiola period and the Frank Rijkaard period a little before that. A lot of the people coming in, whether it was Leo, whether it was Busquets, whether it was Xavi Iniesta, whether, you know, you can go on and on, Puyol, Piqué, anyone, everyone's been La Masia. So Barca's always relied on them. And I feel like that's the identity issue we had in the late 2010s. It's never been a club that has spent 100 million to sign a player. We did it on multiple players, not just one, we did it on three. Out of which only one is still at the club. It didn't make any sense at that point. We've always been with La Masia, and we will continue to require La Masia. Now, if we look at the past 2 or 3 years since Laporta came back to Barca, you name it, whether it's Gavi, Pedri we signed, but whether you name Gavi with even Yamin Lamal coming through now, Balde, Araujo, you can just keep naming players. So we don't have the money right now to sign the right people, but we do have this academy, which has maybe globally always been at the top spot, at least in my opinion. We have to make sure we continue to rely on it, especially for the next 2 to 3 years, because the money is just not there to be able to go out and sign and compete. Like Anto said, compete with like Saudi and even the Villas now of the Premier League. So I think reliance on La Masia is very important. And I think it's very justifiable because they do continue to produce what Barca requires, and they continue to produce that Barca DNA, which is, I think, the most important thing, not just to the team, but also to the fans and the people that live in Barcelona and support them.
Oh, thank you for that, Rohin. Excellent point. You know, La Masia's importance, you know, cannot be understated. They've given us some of the finest players of our generation. But I just want to quickly, you know, go out to Mrinal. You know, Mrinal, you've been a Manchester United fan, you know, all your life, and, you know, we followed the club. But, you know, to a large extent, we've always known that the transition of a player after he reaches a certain level in the Premier League, irrespective of which club it is, has always been to go to Madrid and Barcelona, whether it be, you know, Ronaldo, whether it be Gareth Bale, whether it could be Erling Haaland in the next couple of years. It's always been Real Madrid or Barcelona after you reach a certain point. Do you think that will change? Do you think that is changing with the amount of money in the game? Or do you think legacy always remains legacy?
That's a good question. I still do think that legacy will remain legacy, but that's mainly because of the ability of both Real Madrid and Barcelona to still be competitive in Europe. Like Rohin mentioned, the importance of La Masia. Barcelona have made some really shrewd signings as well this very successful season, with Koundé mainly coming in. So the lure of going to Barcelona and making it one of the greatest clubs in the world again is always going to be there. They've just won the domestic league, which probably puts them ahead of their project than Real Madrid, even though we see Real Madrid perennially successful, but maybe coming at the last, the twilight of their project, of their core team of Kroos, Modric, Benzema. And Barcelona, on the other hand, have some really young prospects like Araujo. You mentioned some of them. Some of these players who could play for Barcelona for the next 10 years and dominate football. Some of these could go to Premier League clubs to generate the cash that Barcelona has been needing to. And some of these who just... And so, even from Premier League clubs, I think the lure of playing at Barcelona and Madrid will be there for a while because of their competitive performances in Europe. Now, I am also interested to hear views about the managerial situation at Madrid, because we know, I think this is Ancelotti's last season. So, Barcelona looks settled on that respect, but I don't know what where the Madrid project is going, even in terms of their talent as well as manager.
No, great point, Mrinal. I think, you know, there are some interesting points that you brought up, especially around, you know, whether Barcelona actually ends up selling some of these guys. And I think that's a great pivot to move into, you know, what is transfer season. It also, to a large extent, is silly season. We link ridiculous players to ridiculous clubs at ridiculous prices. And Andrew, I want to quickly come to you, you know, in regards to one specific signing, because I think because it's happened so early in the window, nobody's actually spent enough time analyzing it or not, you know, spent enough time talking about it. And that's Jude Bellingham, of course, north of 100 million euros, the brightest prospect in world football, you know, in midfield. You know, he's chosen Madrid. An Englishman choosing Madrid is, you know, is quite stunning. It's quite against the law of gravity to a large extent. But Anto, what do you think of Jude Bellingham and where do you think he fits in? And if you can spend some time linking it to the larger project in Madrid, that would really help.
Absolutely. So Jude Bellingham for me personally is a tricky, factoring in the price is a little tricky. We haven't heard of midfielders going for 100 million plus. And now suddenly we have three, and Enzo, Bellingham and Rice. So it's a hard assessment to make if either of them, all of them will be worth, you know, the 100 mil. Prices are inflating. But at the end of the day, would I rather have Enzo, Jude or Rice for 100 mil? I'd rather have Jude. And I think he fits in Madrid in the sense that, you know, Ancelotti has come out, Madrid returned to training this week and said that he's going to likely change formation to fit the pieces that we currently have on the team. So what that tells me is that I think we're going to play a four-man midfield. And I'll probably go into this later. Is that probably also tells me that as it stands, Mbappe's not being considered a part of the project for the 2023-2024 season. We'll go into more detail later, but what I anticipate is a Tchouaméni center mid, Valverde slightly to the right, Camavinga slightly to the left. Both of these players can track back, go forward. They have very, you know, high work rate and box-to-box abilities. And then Bellingham a little bit looser, maybe playing a number 10 role when he can join in and then dropping in defensively to form a double pivot with Tchouaméni. And then Vinicius and Rodrigo up front. That's what I anticipate, and that's the rumor the Spanish press has been circling of how to fit all these pieces. I still would like to find a place for Toni Kroos in that midfield. And maybe if Tchouaméni doesn't come back in the level that we anticipate him coming back in, we can find Toni Kroos there. Like same for Modric. Valverde also had a period of poor form towards the second half of the season. Maybe we can fit Modric there. But the word around Spanish media is that we're going to transition to a four-man midfield. So that's where I anticipate Jude fitting with the Madrid gears. So.
Yeah, no, I think that's great, you know, and to especially, you know, we're sort of ardent Premier League watchers. We don't really get the chance to analyze as deeply the La Liga teams. And it often happens that they're the ones that end up beating us, you know, in the Champions League anyway. But, you know, Rohin, I want to sort of briefly touch upon this as well. And, you know, Anto, feel free to, you know, chime in whenever you'd like to. But, you know, there's a special player, Arda Güler, who I know Barcelona were, you know, eyeing up. You know, he's only played 1,000 minutes, you know, in the Turkish league. There's not enough data you know, for us to crunch on him. But the eye test has been, you know, absolutely phenomenal. So Rohin, you know, from whatever you watched of him, you know, probably through comps, etc., what do you feel about this, him going to Real Madrid as opposed to Barcelona? I mean, Barcelona getting prized out on a talent that really looked very nice, or, you know, is somebody who would fit into the system really well?
Yeah, I mean, I've been nodding my head throughout this question. The reason I've been doing that is because I have watched very, very limited of Arda Güler. But everything I saw about him, every small detail I saw about him just made me go like, oh, wow, this is Barca. Oh, wow, this is, you know, these are the traits we hone at that club, in that academy. So when he did go to Madrid, I understand why he chose to go to Madrid. They're probably the biggest club in the world currently. So I can understand why he would choose to go to Madrid. But in my very personal and maybe biased opinion, I feel like Arda Güler would have had a better career at Barca. I mean, he's just moved literally. So this is like insane speculation. But it's just based off whatever I saw from him. It just gave me, whether it was, you know, those dinks over the last man, like, you know, to find someone, or, you know, those like cutting in on his left foot. You know, the signature Messi cutting in on his left foot, not saying it's the same, but very, very much the same characteristics. It was difficult to watch him go to Madrid for sure, because I feel like he would have had a better time, at Barca. But yeah, I mean, it remains to be seen where he goes. I mean, remains to be seen what he does at Real now. But I wish he did come to Barca. But let's see.
No, thanks for that, Rohin. I think, you know, Arda Güler is definitely a player that, you know, we want to watch out for in the future. You know, it does, you know, give a messy vibe, if that's the correct term to use. But, you know, I'm going to go to Advait, who's actually just joined us for a very important conversation. And, you know, conversation I think is going to be, you know, the saga of the summer. And that's Kylian Mbappe. You know, oftentimes he's been deemed as, you know, lazy. He's oftentimes been deemed as, you know, not a modern presser, so forth. But, you know, let's face it, he's a spectacular player, and, you know, he's a modern day giant. Where do you think his future lies in terms of the next few weeks? And what do you think happens to him?
Why, I just came as a viewer, man. I'm too hungover to walk a lot.
We'll cut this part.
Never mind. We'll cut this out. Okay, good. Mrinal's
so
back.
After the Güler thing, which I finished.
Yes, I'll go after that. Okay,
just take it from
Okay. Awesome. So, you know, Rohin, excellent point about Arda Güler. He definitely represents a lot of what Barcelona really like in a player. You know, flair, finesse, class, somebody who can really lead the line from the right flank, and somebody to look out for in the future. But, you know, Mrinal, I'm going to go to you real quickly, you know, in terms of, you know, what I think is going to be the saga of the summer, a player who, you know, by no means is a normal player, a special generation defining player who clearly is having problems at his home club, PSG. And Kylian Mbappe is, you know, is in everybody's ears, is on in every conversation. Mrinal, do you think he moves this summer, and do you think Real Madrid is the right place for him to land at this stage of his career?
I do think Real Madrid is the right place, yes. I don't think he moves this summer, no. Because I think Madrid are at the end of their project, and it's not as tempting a project for Mbappe this season. But after Ancelotti leaves, there will be a new manager, a new wave of optimism, and a new bid for Champions League, for La Liga. And Mbappe would definitely see that as an opportunity. And every year we see he tries to win the Champions League with PSG, but with every year's failings, he just will one day want to pull the plug on the PSG project and try to lead the line for Madrid, because, of course, irrespective of the club he plays for, he is going to be the main man. So I do see it happen, and I do see Madrid in a very interesting state right now, where it's really unclear whether next season are we still going to start with the old guard in midfield. Who are we going to see? They seem to have a lot of good midfielder options. They don't seem to have a star striker. They seem defensively reasonably solid with some good options. So I don't see this as the peak of the Madrid project. Hence, I don't see Mbappe joining, but it will happen. And we all know Madrid will eventually invest those funds in talent. So, and they will challenge again. So I do think it's a real possibility next season when another manager comes in.
No, good point. I think, Rinal, especially with Mbappe's future, you know, in the balance, the real question now is, do Madrid go this summer or do they wait it out? Do they show that level of brinksmanship? Does Perez decide to splash everything he has? And of course, Anto, you know more about, you know, Perez over the years than any of us. So shed some light on what he is really, and how do you think he reacts to this Mbappe situation?
I mean, I think personally that if there's an option for Mbappe to come this season and Perez not to compromise Madrid's economic solidity, he's going to make a move to bring Mbappe, because there's no off years at Madrid. They're simply not like waiting around 1 year, see what's happening. If he has a chance to build a better team, he's going to take it, especially with someone like Mbappe. So I think if PSG put a price, call it 200 mil, something reasonable, and Perez has that money in his power to go at it, I don't think he's going to wait 1 year just to get him for free. I think to him, trying his hardest and building the best Madrid team is worth it. But then again, I think 200 million, especially after we've already spent 150 million and there is no clear path to bringing that number down, I think you can't end a summer with a net spend of 350 million, even if we have been taking it a little bit easier in the past couple of years. It is a ridiculous amount of money. So it is a balance that we're going to have to thread. There's a number of exits that are rumored. I think Madrid could get around 50-ish millions from being conservative from the transfers out between Ferland Mendy and a couple of Real Madrid B players that Real Madrid B descended one category. So they're going to have to clean the house and start from zero. That's the way it works. If your team descends, you sell all the youngsters, all the good ones that are too good to play in the third division, and you end up racking up, you know, 20, 30 million off of that. So it's a calculation. It's an economic calculation. If we just want to say, will Florentino try his best to build the best team? I think that's a resounding yes. So we shall see. Let's leave it at that, I think.
Sorry for going out of turn a bit here. What's the manager situation looking at like next season? I've actually been briefly reading Mourinho's name being thrown around potentially for a second stint at Madrid. So I also think that will impact how much they decide to spend, because Perez will have to back the new manager. So what names are we looking at? Are we looking at Klopp potentially?
So lately the names have been gathering more, the most traction are more young coaches in the Zidane profile, like ex-Madrid players that have had one or two stints at another lower club, and, you know, show promise and then come over, similar to the Xavi, Guardiola, Luis Enrique philosophy of picking a successor to your project. So I would say Xavi Alonso. If I were to bet, I would bet on Xavi Alonso as being the next Madrid coach. Raul is also an option, even though I think Raul could use a stint at, you know, a lower La Liga club or like UEFA Europa League size club and prove his worth. But I think those are the two main candidates. Then you have, you know, the usual high tier managers that are always linked with Madrid, Nagelsmann, Klopp. I don't think Mo would come back, even though I would love Mo to come back, just because that ended up a little bit sour. But Mo is always sending his regards from wherever he is, saying he loves Madrid and remembering and celebrating Madrid's triumphs. So maybe behind the scenes there's something going on. But again, if I was a betting man, I would put my money on Xavi Alonso, who's done a great job at Leverkusen.
That's a good. I mean, you know, honestly, Anto, there's so much to discuss, and I think that's probably for another podcast in terms of where Madrid's philosophy is heading towards. But I think it's the right time to move towards, you know, another young coach who's making his own waves, you know, in Catalonia. You know, Xavi, he's just won the La Liga for Barcelona, Rohan. But for Barcelona fans, for some reason, it doesn't feel like an overwhelming season. It doesn't feel like they've achieved, you know, an incredible, you know, feat. Although from the outside, being a United fan, it I'd be over the moon. So Rohan, with Xavi, where do you think this club is heading? What is the sort of the feeling around the camp now at the moment?
Definitely, it's a very exciting project. Of course, he being the player he was for Barca and us bringing him back almost is like Anto said, you know, those Pep Guardiola vibes. And obviously that led all the fans to believe that now this is a moment of ascension back to where we used to be. Obviously, I mean, we have a lot of other variables going along with it, which will decide where we end up over the next 2 or 3 years. But just coming to Xavi and to his project, when he joined us about a year and a half ago, mid-season, we were ninth on the table, Barca. And we were about 18 or 21 points of Real, who were at the top of the table. And we ended up finishing that season in second, I think between 10 or 12 points off Real. And we had that classical blowout game where we beat them 4-0. And I think that was the first statement that he needed to make when he came in, that Barca can play at that level. It's just maybe whether it was managerial issues or system issues at that point, which was preventing Barca. But as soon as he came in, the first point to prove was we can play at that level, which was qualifying again for the Champions League and finishing second. Then this season, like you said, where we won the La Liga, definitely, I can see how to you winning the league would look like a really, really big deal. And maybe, I don't know, Anto can back me up on this, but when it's Barca and Real, winning the league is a given. Winning the league, winning the Copa del Rey, you should be winning. That's what the fans expect from you. What you need to be doing to have a successful season for the fans to be happy is at least the semi-finals of the Champions League, because that's how big these two clubs are. And that's how much history these two clubs have. So I'm very happy that we won the La Liga. I think it's a move forward. I think it's a step in the right direction to show that, okay, we have it in us to do it over 38 games. The Champions League is more of a, you know, hit or miss kind of thing. Like if you do have a bad game, you could lose to a much, much inferior team too. So I feel like maybe we do need to find our footing throughout knockout games, but we've shown that we can do it over 38 games. It's a stable project. Xavi knows exactly what he's doing. There might be certain people who aren't as happy with him, just considering he's not playing the exact Barca kind of football everyone expects, which is the tiki-taka and the total football thing. He's getting them to ping more balls over the top and stuff like that. But I think it's a solid project all in all. I feel like Xavi has the right tools. More importantly, he has the right technical players in midfield. That's the most important thing, because I feel like Xavi can help hone and grow certain skills in certain players, which are very important to the philosophy at Barcelona, and to be able to play the kind of expansive and free-flowing football that Barca usually plays. Just to talk a little more about his project, I wanted to go into the signings that we've made this year and the one we're looking towards. So obviously we got Gundogan and Iñigo Martinez on the free. Iñigo Martinez, solid centre-back, played really well for Bilbao, went to a Copa del Rey final with them also. So all in all, a good signing. Spanish DNA should work well, maybe as a third or fourth centre-back option. Gundogan, as we've discussed before on the City pod, world-class player, maybe one of the best midfielders in the world currently, at least one of the best number eights in the world currently. So again, a great signing, especially on the free, to bring a little more experience to a very young but a very talented midfield. Then moving on to Vitor Roque, of course, Tigrinho, absolute beast of a centre forward. Used to play as a central defensive midfielder. That's why I guess he has that kind of build. But electric pace, absolutely electric pace, can turn off a defender very easily. Is as good with his left as he is with his right foot. Can take a couple of touches, you know, take people on. And I think that's very exciting, even though he is coming in Jan. I think that's very exciting because he is only 18 and I feel like we can mold him and shape him in the Barca way, because he doesn't have that many passes that he plays right now, even in the Brazilian league. But all in all, a fantastic signing. Now, just coming to the last person that I wanted to talk about, who I wanted to touch on, which is Oriol Romeu. So the biggest gap since Lionel Messi left has been left now in the middle of the Barcelona midfield, and that's Sergio Busquets. Him leaving has created a problem for Xavi because he needs an anchor to play the system that he usually likes to play. And this is the midfield that has Pedri, Gavi, De Jong and Gundogan. And Xavi still feels like he needs to add someone more to this. Now, these are four really, really talented players. And I feel like I was really skeptical about Oriol Romeu at the beginning. I didn't look at him as a Barca signing, even though he is technically from the La Masia Academy. But just going through some of his stats and stuff like that, I realized that he is a good enough fix for a team that has an otherwise really, really technically gifted midfield. He is that kind of very simplistic anchor who sprays the ball, you know, moves it side to side, doesn't do too many extraordinary things, but is able to do what Busquets and De Jong do really well, which is ping that ball over the top to find Rafinha or Dembele on the wings, basically. And just those minimalistic things, like, you know, is what we need to add. We don't need to add someone with the technical expertise that Busquets did, because we have that in De Jong and in Gundogan. But we are able to add someone who is really good with his back face to the opposition goal. Like when he receives the ball from his goalkeeper, he's really good. He takes almost the most amount of touches in that Girona side. And I feel like he'll be a good addition. It's obviously a cut-paste thing for now. It's not a long-term fix because he will be turning 32 this year. But I feel like he would be a good addition to just for the next year or two until we can find our footing when it comes to the financial aspect of it. So all in all, Xavi's 4-3-3 setup with Gavi on the left wing, Balde in attack, zooming up that left flank, and Gavi dropping in into midfield, playing with Gundogan, De Jong and Pedri, will be something to behold because of the amount of technical excellence they have, which allows Pedri to, you know, flow towards the right and then be able to play in Rafinha and Lewandowski, as we've seen so well this season. But yeah, just circling back to end my point here is we saw they can do it over 38 games. We saw they can have a really staunch defense. We need to see what more they can bring in attack. And we need to see what they can do in the Champions League or in Europe this season to be able to judge how far they've moved forward.
No, thank you, Rohan. I think, you know, some very pertinent points, you know, one of which I'm going to pick on, which is Gundogan. You know, quickly to share an anecdote before we move on to our last section. I think it was the Bayern season, I think, where Dortmund, you know, came really close and Rinal and I were watching the game. And that's when Rinal picked on Gundogan as the next sort of midfield maestro. And you know, he was the one who sort of spotted him very, very early on before Pep actually brought him to Manchester City. You know, Rinal, I want to quickly ask you, what did you see in this player and has he achieved his full potential? And what does the signing mean for Barcelona?
Yeah, so I've had an eye on the player since a really long time. It was actually that game where Dortmund beat Madrid 4-0. As well as the game before that, which actually in the Champions League quarterfinals, which is also a thriller, Dortmund versus Malaga, which surprising Malaga made it. It was a very, very niche Malaga team, I think, with some players like Julio Baptista and some yes, some real throwback players. So it was those two games where I just happened to see those games, and even in the 4-0, he literally covered every blade of grass. He was in the 0-0 against Malaga. He was man of the match in the away leg. He controlled the game, and he was this complete all-action player who found himself comfortable no matter where on the pitch he was, whether it's receiving from the centre-backs, whether it's creating play, whether he finds himself down on the flank. And despite a real bad injury scare, which derailed a move to Barcelona shortly after, he has come back really strong. Of course, Pep Guardiola could see what he brought to the side, and he's come back really strong. I think that he might be the player that could just lift Barcelona into a very solid performing side in the Champions League. Barcelona do, at least to me, they do look scary again. And they're inching closer and closer towards world domination again. It's something people would have thought that was not possible for 10 years after Messi left. But with signings like Gundogan, they are moving closer to that. So I just want to ask people who've been watching them on a regular basis, like some La Liga supporters, like La Liga enthusiasts, that do you see this Barcelona side that you might have seen very often? Do you see it, coupled with the signings they made, capable of the world domination that they had achieved? Or is this team still, 1 year, 2 years away from those lofty, lofty standards?
It's difficult sometimes to think about that era, that 2008 to 2013 or 2015 era, let's just say, because it was so dominant. It was filled with so many world-class players. Not necessarily, it's not necessary that they were spent, that big money was spent on them. But, it's difficult to be able to match this to that currently, just considering how abysmal last season was in Europe. Going out to United in the Europa wasn't something that was, acceptable at all. I mean, going out in the Champions League was never acceptable, but since that happened and it was a rebuild, I was willing to accept that aspect of it, but going out in the Europa to United was not acceptable. So to be able to achieve the level of dominance that 3 or 4 year era had, I think it'll take a while, just considering the fact that in 2002, 2003, Barca had really poor financial problems too at that time. They had a lot of issues going on, and we were able to bounce back from there. I mean, which was about in 6 or 7 years, we were able to become the dominant force in the world. So I would say we still need about another 3 to 5 years to be able to deal with that, to deal with the financial implications. The Camp Nou just went under renovation. So that's going to cost a lot of money. The debt has remained the same since Laporta took over 2 years ago at $1.35 billion. And that's because of the amount of signings we had to make last summer to try and be relevant to all the other big clubs in the world. So another 5 to 6 years, I think it is realistic to see an X level of dominance from Barcelona. I'm not going to say it's going to be the same level, but to see a level of dominance where, you look at them and you're confident about them, not just in the La Liga, but you're confident about them in Europe, where you go like, okay, this team can go all the way. At least 3 years, I'd say a maximum of maybe 5 to 6 years where we see them start to dominate again, as long as the other variables remain the same. Like, I can't speak to any other variables at this point.
I'm going to jump in just because I think sometimes it's easier to make assessments like coming from the outside a little bit. Being a Madrid fan, I try to remain unbiased and not just shit on Barca when I give opinions. But I think Barca right now are at a state where they're not in the first tier of candidates to win the Champions League, which I would put City, Madrid, And probably I would stop there, but I think they're in that second tier. I think they have made really smart signings, and I would pin them with like the Arsenal, the Bayern Munich bracket of teams that had something, looked good and had some asterisks last season that prevented them from performing better. And for me, Barca last season, it really came down to that awful injury streak they had in defense during the Champions League. They didn't have Christensen. They didn't have Koundé. They were playing at some points, they were playing Marcos Alonso at center back. And like, it was just a shameful looking defense. And then to bring it to the level that Barca had 5 years ago, and Madrid also had 5 years ago, and now we see City at, where they've like strung together like five Premier Leagues, what is it, and one Champions League, that level of domination. I think it's not enough just building a squad. I think you at some point need to get a little quote-unquote lucky and unlock a special talent. So it's hard to pin that on a timeline, because you can do everything right and not unlock, you know, a Haaland, a Messi, a Ronaldo. I think Madrid has unlocked that talent with Vinicius. So I think we need to look at the Barca squad and say, who can reach that level? And at this moment in time, I struggle to see that differentiating, like, you know, 40 goal contribution player in the squad. Maybe Victor Roque will be that player. Maybe Lewandowski will, even though he hasn't been Bayern good. Maybe Lewandowski will give us a Bayern level season. But if you want to reach those heights of getting a treble, or getting, you know, multiple titles in one season, or in over the course of two or three seasons, I think you need that differentiating talent. But I do think Barca have a squad to win the league, to compete for the Champions League, and do good stuff this season.
Oh, excellent. I think, you know, that, you know, really sums up where these two clubs really stand. And, you know, we're going to finally move on to our last segment. And Andrew, I'm going to start with you over here. There are two questions I want to ask you. One is, what do you expect of Madrid for next season? And the other is, what is your bold prediction for next season for this team?
That's a tough question. So next season is going to be interesting, because it's going to be a transitional season in a team that doesn't really allow for transitional seasons, I think. So it's pretty clear that Ancelotti's leaving at the end of the year. And so it's a matter of trying to fit all these pieces that we have got. I'm still bullish on Madrid. So I think we will keep on and compete in the league. I don't know if we'll win it, but we will be, you know, compete in the league and reach semifinals, because I think we are, you know, a top two team in Europe. And then a bold prediction. Let me think. I think we're gonna see three Spanish teams in quarterfinals of the Champions League.
That's fantastic, Anto. No, you know, Rohan, I'm gonna quickly jump to you in the interest of time. You go next, and then, you know, Mrinal, you can go right after. I know you love your bold predictions as well.
Yeah, my bold prediction is a Barca Arsenal Champions League semi-final. For Xavi and Arteta head-to-head, Pep Guardiola's disciples, and those adaptations of his discipline going head-to-head with the signings that they've made this season and with the talent that they have on show.
I like that narrative. Imagine a final four for the Champions League semifinals to be Guardiola, Ten Hag, Xavi and Arteta. We could see that. Four Pep disciples. Well, three Pep disciples and Pep bashing it out. That would be truly a fairy tale soccer season.
I like that too, yeah.
That's awesome.
Spent a lot of time talking about Barca and Madrid, but I think it's worthwhile mentioning that Atletico have made some really smart signings.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Some exciting signings. I like they really gathered some depth in defense with Galan, Sonyuku, Mourinho. So they really are looking deeper. So it's a question to see if they'll be able to get their final targets. You know, they want to send CDM, Verratti, Amrabat, our names being played. And then will they have Morata again next season? Will they get another striker? But I think especially the sign of Galan, I'm definitely going to snatch him up for 10 mil next season in the auction.
I think they could cause some upsets in the league and in the Champions League next season.
Okay, now that's, you know, Atletico has always been a power horse and, you know, you never know what they throw at you. But, you know, with that, you know, we'll bring an end to this episode. It's been wonderful discussing these two giants and, you know, we just don't get enough opportunity to dissect them as we have today. So I'm hoping, you know, you really enjoyed this episode, you know, with La Liga experts, so to say, you know, the folks that really, you know, are up at 1 a.m. watching these games live or up at, you know, ridiculous hours trying to dissect their own teams and giving them their support. So thank you once again to Anto, to Rohin and to Mrinal for joining us on this wonderful episode, which was Barcelona and Real Madrid. And we hope to discuss much more of it, you know, in the weeks and months to come. Once again, thank you very much from the Football Road Podcast. Do keep us in your ears and we'll see you next week.